years, Kathy and I, my wife and I, have watched Ed and his wife, Amy, give their lives away through the ministry of Crew. And for most of that time, it's through, been through Athletes in Action. Ed was a basketball player for Kent State, I believe. Did you know I played basketball at one time?
I've heard that.
Yeah. For the Blue Devils.
Nice.
Everybody's thinking, Duke, really?
The local Blue Devils?
The Fredonia State Blue Devils, yeah. That Division III team in Western New York, we beat most of the girls' teams we played. So, for many of those years, like I said, he was with Athletes in Action, and more recently has moved over to Family Life, the marriage ministry of Crew. And Family Life has a special place in my heart because back in 1982, my wife and I were talking about divorce, and someone invited us to a Family Life conference, and it really was the tool that God used to save our marriage. And I'm just really excited that he's going to be engaged with Family Life because it's an awesome ministry, and I just really believe that Ed and Amy are going to make it even better. Ed and his wife, Amy, have been married for 20 years, and they have 4 children. Eric, 19, and by my math, you didn't wait long to start a family. Yeah.
Yep.
Maria, who's 16. Jack, who's 14. You see him running around here.
Yeah, Jack.
Somewhere. Is he here?
He is wandering.
Wandering around.
The wilderness.
Wearing Ohio State garb.
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah, leave him alone. Ah, leave him alone. It's like 4 of you guys accosted him as soon as he got here. He's from Ohio.
And then Trey is who's 9.
Trey's 9.
Yeah. So Ed is currently the content creative consultant for Family Life. He and Amy regularly speak at Weekend to Remember conferences. And in fact, a number of years ago, I sent my son and his wife to one of these Weekends to Remember in the Midwest, and Ed and Amy were the speakers, the keynote speakers that weekend. And not too long after that, Mark and Annie gifted us with our grandson.
How about that?
Really. And then not too long later, granddaughter, and they're expecting again. So
the weekend was so good, they stayed in their room the whole time. That's what that means.
So thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Right after that, we increased our support to Ed. I think it's called quid pro quo.
That's
might
right.
be the term.
That's right. We can work that deal out in here, too. And you guys that are wanting to have babies.
So he has an MA and Master's in Divinity from Trinity Evangelical Divinity School and a PhD in American Culture Studies from Bowling Green State University. He's also written a number of books and written some articles for Desiring God and also a chapter in the 4-volume series on C.S. Lewis's life, works, and legacy. He named Jack's namesake is for C.S. Lewis, so he's obviously one of your heroes. And it was kind of funny, on the way up here I said, Jack, you're named after C.S. Lewis. And he said, well, yeah, I am, but I'm not sure what that means. And Jack, is he here? He's not. He'll have a lifetime to figure that out. But one thing for sure, I know that you're real proud of him. Deeply, and I'll say that to him directly. So
first convicting moment of the weekend was riding up and realizing I hadn't explained to my son what his name is for.
Yeah.
So that's why we come here, is to feel lousy, right?
Well, please welcome with me.
Thank you, John. Thanks, man. Thank you. So I love men's retreats. That's what I've told John. I was here, gosh, I don't know, we haven't actually figured it out, like 3 or 4 years ago. It was my first time here, and I've been coaching my oldest son's varsity basketball team. I was an assistant coach, and so I'm like, John, is this always the weekend that it's going to be? And he's like, it's pretty much what it's been for 4 decades. I'm like, well, I'm going to be a basketball game. So he graduated, and so that opened up the door for me to be able to come back, which I consider a privilege, just like all the other guys have said. I love legacy. I love when a particular area starts to take on meaning to people, where the land starts to mean something to people. And so it's significant. It's significant for all of us to be here. And I love being reminded of that. I love men's retreats because I love getting away with guys and trying to figure out how to be men. I feel like this is actually as good as any way to end what we've already done this morning and head into lunch. Because what the Lord has really put on me for the last few days, and I've been thinking about this for months now, but it just all kind of came into me last week to just talk specifically about manhood and what it means to renew our mind as we think about being men. Okay? So Randy set us up for that wonderfully. I actually spoke at a men's retreat a couple months ago up near Columbus, and it was called the Man Up Retreat. And I was one of the last guys to go. I wasn't actually able to be there the whole weekend. I got there kind of late in the game. But, you know, when I get to a place, I notice what's going on there. I was trying to figure out, you know, who the audience was and was looking at all the different things that they were advertising. Got myself a shirt out of it. And one of the things that I noticed is that Man Up was written everywhere on billboards. The pictures, there was a picture of Joe Burrow, okay, Joe Burrow, the LSU quarterback, who actually grew up like a half hour away from where the retreat happened, okay? There was a picture of a Marine who was in some life-saving situation, and there was a picture of men in the woods. And I just thought, okay, like, again, I wasn't exactly even sure what I wanted to do with that, but obviously what was being said here is that Man Up had something to do with accomplishment. It had something to do with stepping up in war. And it had to do with wandering in the woods, doing things out in the trees and whatnot, okay? And so regardless of what we think about those three images, like, they had to choose what they meant by it. And it just got me thinking, like, what does it mean to man up? Like, we live in this time when it's so confusing to be a man. Like, I don't know what it's like for you guys, but I do know what it's like for you guys. We live in a hot mess of a time to understand what it means to be a man if we're not around this kind of stuff all the time, right? Like, we're getting way more doses of stuff that's confusing to us than we are corrective stuff, most of us, most of the time. So I feel passionate for myself in my own quest for staying on the right path and trying to be a good husband, trying to be a good friend, trying to be a good dad to all my kids. Like, I feel pretty vigilant about it at this stage. I'm 52. And I'm just about at the edge of being a cantankerous older man who just doesn't give a crap anymore, okay? And who's got a shorter list of stuff that he really cares about and that he's gonna fight for. And one of them for me is just this whole idea of fighting to be a man. I wanna be a man of God. I wanna be what he's called me to be, what he created me to be, what he put me on the earth to be, and that has not gotten old to me at all yet. So, in the three sessions we've got, I've kind of locked myself into outlines that I gave you. Now, we may still get rid of some of them if things change. Things might change this weekend, right? Wayne gave us that permission. But for right now, did you hand that out yet, John? Okay, so you got an outline in front of you. Oh, you don't? Outlines are coming to you right now. Man up, John. John already asked me three times if I wanted him passed out, and I kept telling him no, so I got what I asked for. So I did make outlines. So that you've got something to look at, you have some sense of where we're going, and you can write things down or doodle on it or whatever you need to do, but I'm still an outline guy. Who else needs one? Raise a hand if you still need one. Got him. I also haven't made a PowerPoint in like 15 years. So Eric said he didn't have a PowerPoint ready. I'm like, dude, I made one, okay, yesterday, because I got a whole bunch of pictures I want you to see, but I have no idea if it's going to work or not. Here's the first test, okay? I want to watch this video. You'll get the gist of it. It's a man on the street video. And what does it mean to be a man? No sound. There you go, Eric. That's why we don't do PowerPoints. Joe, what do I need to do here? That is a good idea. Yeah, do we have a microphone?
Check.
See, I don't think anything's coming out of this, though. What if we unplug it for a second and they can just listen to it? I just see in this setup it won't give me the video. All right, guys, here we go. Sorry about that. Oh, thanks, Joe.
Can I ask you a couple questions? Hey, fellas, how are you? Mind if I ask you some questions? What does it mean to be a man?
No,
I just
want
to ask a couple questions. We're just talking a little bit about what it means to be a man in today's world. Can I get 1 minute of your time? Quick question. I'm telling you why. Because we're talking about what it means to be a man. And
that's okay.
No, come on. Come on. Come on. One question.
You might want to try somebody else.
Thanks. Okay. All right. We're just walking around asking people a little bit about being a man. Would you be up for that?
No, thanks. Thanks.
You're not? Okay. He's not interested. When did you go from being a boy to being a man?
About 14.
19. 23?
30.
30. What does it mean to be a man? To go from being a boy to a man? What does that look like?
Probably just more responsibility, I would guess, is the big thing.
A boy is short and a man is tall.
When you're 65 years old, I don't remember back that many years.
Well, no.
Just having more responsibilities.
Well, how do you know that you're not a boy anymore? Let's put it that way. So, are you, or...
Because I cruise chicks.
Well, say that again, what?
Cruising chicks.
Okay, so part of going from boyhood to being manhood is cruising the chicks, yeah. Is what you said. Okay.
You have to have a situation in which to challenge yourself. If you never leave home or you're taken care of, you won't grow up.
What do you think?
To do everything that you have to for your family, for your country, and for the Lord.
Taking on responsibilities of leading your family to God and just being a leader in your community.
Boy is immature.
Being a man, you've got just a better foundation to make all your judgment calls, everything going through life. The right direction, the way God wants you to go.
I'd have to say owning up to what's going on.
How did you know at 14 you are now a man?
I was pretty much on my own. My family was not detached from me. And I discovered girls and lost my virginity.
What I hear you saying is being on your own and losing your virginity, that's kind of what makes you, or turns you into becoming a man.
I was working too. Had a job.
Huh? Okay.
I don't know. I really don't.
Okay. So that was a complete dumpster fire of answers, wasn't it? I mean, it's all over the place. And the part of the reason why I really liked it is just because of that, because that's how I felt growing up. so many different ways into it, so many different thoughts about it, certain things that sound like they might be right, but a whole bunch of others that don't sound like they're quite right. Just all over the place. Like if my 14-year-old son Jack was just to watch that video and we said, go ahead and figure out what it means to be a man just from this input. What is that? What would you write down right now? Do it. Take 30 seconds. Don't overthink it. You don't get to write a paragraph. What's a sentence? Wasn't going to do this, but let's do it. I'd like to hear a couple of them. Go ahead. Did you raise your hand?
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead. What'd you write?
Mine came from Robert Lewis, if you've heard of him. He has an acronym for that called REAL. So it's reject passivity, expect a fair reward, accept responsibility, and lead courageously.
Okay. Good. That was all in one sentence, too. Great. What else did you write down?
Fulfill the Lord's role for my life, regardless of the cost.
Fulfill the Lord's role for my life, regardless of the cost, okay? Keep going. A few more. Orange.
Willing to sacrifice for others.
Okay, sacrifice.
Becoming a man means engage in the process of accepting responsibility for ourselves, our place in the world, and following the Lord's will.
Okay. How about over here? You guys want to represent anything over here?
Be Christ-like.
Be Christ-like. Owning your responsibility, stand in harm's way, reject fear. So here's what's interesting, and I've been doing this for 30 years now. It's like even inside the Christian circle, like first of all, the first thing that stands out to me is y'all got taught that from outside the normal system. You got taught that from outside. We talk about not being conformed or you know, pushed into the mold of the world. Whatever it was that you were getting from the world, all those answers represent something that was transformational. It's a different way of thinking. You got that from the Bible and from Christian men. But even inside of the Christian community, sometimes it can be a little confusing. There's a lot of different language that just got put out on the table there. And it was all good. It's just difficult sometimes to figure out how to navigate your way through what it means to be a man as we go through different seasons of life. So I want you to journey back, and I so love that we interacted with Romans 12, because I love that verse of not being any longer conformed to this world, which implies that all of us, most of us, start out being conformed to the world somehow, unless we've had a very radically different kind of upbringing, or we were Amish, which is a radical upbringing, right, where you kind of sequester yourself from the world. We start out being conformed to the world. So there's a work that has to happen to get us out of that. But it's good for us, I think, to go back sometimes and think about what are the images, the pictures, the words, the posters in our minds that have shaped how we think about ourselves as men. Because that's the stuff that we're starting with most of the time and don't even realize that it's going on. Okay? So here's what's crazy. So already this Friday morning, we have done a Greek study on Romans 1 and 2, had it read aloud to us in the Greek, studied the brain, read Ezekiel 1. Y'all didn't understand what was going on there. That was mind-blowing, what was happening in Ezekiel 1. And now you're going to get the Farrah poster, beer cans, and Arnie. Okay? Like, when do you get that on a Friday? When was the last time you got all that on one day, one morning? So some of us grow up, when it comes to the pictures that are on our wall or the things that we're taught to, it's babes, it's beer, it's biceps. It's funny because I'm very much a product of the 70s and the 80s, and I think I can get away with a lot of these references in this room, given the age of the guys in here. But it was the Farrah poster. I wasn't allowed to have that poster, but that was on a lot of my friends' walls, okay? It's crazy because that was hot back in 77. That was the most beautiful woman and salacious poster anybody could have on their wall. I see women more naked at Walmart now when I go, okay? I was just thinking about that. But that, like, Pharaoh was the epitome of beauty, and there was something about going after girls like that that kind of got, you know, put into my brain as a young boy, 8, 9, 10 years old. Tons of beer cans. We all know the role that beer plays in our life or has. And the Arnie, it's biceps. It's get big, burly, okay? So some of us grew up with the bees. Some of us grew up chasing the applause, accomplishment, approval line of posters. So I grew up in my dad was a high school football coach. I grew up very much in a jock world. And so this was near and dear to my heart. I literally had this Sultans of Slam poster on my wall. It was all the major dunkers of the 80s. Andre Thornton was my favorite baseball player. I read everything that I could about Andre Thornton. As it turned out, he's a Christian. You guys don't remember Andre Thornton, but he was a Christ follower. And so I was significantly influenced by him. And believe it or not, what's that a picture of? That's the Orange Crush from, I think, 76, 77, somewhere in there. Is that Randy Gratishar? So it's crazy. One of my best friends, his brother brought him to Denver all the time. I grew up in Cleveland. He came to Denver all the time. And so he had a big Orange Crush poster up on his wall. But the point is, some of us grew up with pursuing and seeking approval and accomplishment, applause from people. When it came to how we thought about ourselves as men, I'm going to tell you this real quick. My son, Trey, he's 9 years old. He was in a basketball game the other day, and he's terrible. Like, I don't know, you've been at a third grade basketball game lately? It's just awful. Like, they make you pay to get into it. I'm just like, are you kidding me? Like, they run around, there's a ball on the court. He accidentally made a couple baskets in this particular game. And he had some friends that were there watching him. They were sitting in the corner. And after the game, you know, he was so happy he made a basket. He just had the biggest smile. It was a beautiful scene of just pure joy attached to sports, which, you know, that goes away really quick. Well, he comes over to me after the game, and I was like, Trey, did you have fun? He was like, oh, yeah, Dad, it was the best. And did you hear Ava cheering for me? So Ava was over in the corner. Ava's one of his best little girlfriends. I was like, I did hear Ava cheering for you. And I just thought, like, right there already, the joy of play is already being intermingled with the approval and the applause and the sense of accomplishment that he's already starting to take into himself as a 9-year-old. We get that. Sometimes it's academics, right? Think to yourself, maybe it wasn't sports for you, but it was something else that you excelled at as a young boy, as a teenager, that you got approval for, okay? So we know that one. Others of us, it was responsibility, respect, righteousness. So I had a whole bunch of friends that were military guys. A bunch of you guys in here were military guys. Have Marine posters on their wall. Marine sayings. These colors don't run and neither do I. It's a certain attitude that says I'm going to stand my ground and I'm going to stand for right things. Star Wars. That was huge in the late 70s, and this just came back to my mind for some other reason, but like Star Wars was all around me when I was in a formative time. And Star Wars was about good versus evil, among other things. Okay. So as you think, well, let's do one more. Because besides just posters, pictures, things that were given to us, that were talked about around us, screen characters that shaped you. So maybe you grew up in a home where there was no TV or you weren't allowed to watch movies. That was not the case for me. And so as I've thought back over the course of my life and tried to figure out the manhood thing and trying to figure out where I've gotten the messages that I've gotten, I think about Archie Bunker. You know why? Because all of the men on my dad's side of the family were just like Archie Bunker. What was Archie Bunker like? Grumpy. He's racist. He's a bigot. What else? Rude. How's he talk to his wife? Disrespectful. What's his view of women, period? Right? It is. It's disrespectful, but it was like couched in being really funny. The crazy thing is that show was actually made to make fun of Archie Bunker, but you know what? A whole bunch of our dads and a whole bunch of us actually got all kinds of information about manhood from Archie Bunker that has really not been helpful to us in our marriages or other relationships in life. But we can just go through that. I also had the Little House on the Prairie dad. I'm not afraid to admit that this weekend with you guys. Little House of Prairie Monday night. So he was a very different kind of dad. James West from the Wild Wild West on Sunday nights. John Robinson on Lost in Space. And Mr. Smith. How big of a weenie was Mr. Smith? Okay. But what a man of integrity was John Robinson. And all these are the Rambo and John Travolta. You know what I got? After Saturday Night Fever came out, I wasn't even allowed to watch it. It's a horrible movie after I actually ended up seeing it, but hugely influential. I got platform shoes to go back to school in. My mom said, don't do this. Don't do it. She said it would be bad for you. Mom, I got to have them. I'm thinking about this. I got to have these shoes. Why? Because it seemed like John Travolta was so cool at that time. Got him, got blisters, had to take him back. John Belushi, the dad from Good Times, used to have up here at home. What were the characters? What were the actors? What were the roles that influenced you that maybe you have never even really thought about? I want you to turn to each other right now and just talk about that. Think about it. Obviously, for you guys that are younger, it's going to look way different. Okay? But what are the posters, if you will, that have kind of hung on the wall of your mind that have shaped the way you've thought about manhood? Don't do the Robert Lewis thing. Apart from what you've gotten from the Christian circle, what's that other stuff that's been working against your view of manhood? Okay? Let's do that for 5 minutes. Okay? I want you to turn and talk to each other. Twos, threes, fours. Don't be too big of a group because then you can't share. Where are you been? I got it. Okay, 30 more seconds. 30 more seconds. Okay. So here's the reality. Here's the reality. We could talk about that for hours. And I just heard you say, actually, and I know this is in here too. He said his dad, can I say what you just said? That his dad was a pastor and he lived a very sheltered life relative to this stuff, which I think is a huge blessing. Okay. The reality is though, again, depending on who you hung out with, and let's forget about you for a second. The reality is we're all still, no matter how sheltered we were, we are still influenced by the world system in thinking about manhood. Because our friends and everybody else that we work with and people that we had access to were shaped by it, and that rubs off on us, okay? So, what does the Bible say? Look at your outline. I wish there was a lot more that was just specifically written directly to men and women, for that matter. Here's one of the rare places where men are actually named and called out. It says, be watchful in 1 Corinthians 16. Be watchful. Stand firm in the faith. Act like men. What's just great three words those are. Be strong. Let all that you do be done in love. Love being agape love, which is that kind of love that does what's best on behalf of other people all the time. Okay? Among other things. It always does what's best on behalf of other people. It's the sacrificial kind of love. So we're not going to unpack this particular verse, although we're going to come back to it. But I'm so intrigued by the ideas of being strong and letting all that you do being done in love, what's best for others, being mashed together right there. Strength that's manifested or shown in love. Doing what's best for somebody else. Just hold on to that. Because I want to go back to Genesis for a second. Jim opened us up to this actually last night. In Genesis chapter 1, the very first verse of the Bible, the first verses of the Bible, say, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form, and it was void. And darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And so there was chaos. It was void of anything. There was darkness, extremely loaded words. I mean, you can come up with some really wacky stuff out of Genesis, but they are also really, really loaded, those first few chapters are, with so much that can help shape us in the way we think about the world that we live in and us in it. God begins to step out over the void, over the darkness. And what does he do for the rest of Genesis chapter 1? As each day comes by, what is he doing? He's creating stuff, okay? He's creating stuff. He's just kind of systematically and rhythmically going through what come to be called days. And in each day, he is stepping into that void and he's ordering it. He's creating a shape to it. He's creating purpose to it. At the end of each day, what does he say? It's good. It's good, man. And what he ends up doing near the end of this is he creates men and women. And that's good. Like, it's all good. What did Jim say was kind of key for us last night as he started last night? What did he say was a key verse in all of this first chapter that he pulled out? Say it again. He created both what? What though? In the image of God, he created them. Yeah. He created them. I shouldn't do that to you before lunch. I'm sorry. I should know better than that. Try to make you go back to that point in time. He created man and woman in the image of God, which didn't mean that we were created to be exactly like God. It didn't mean that we had all the attributes of God. No. But it meant that he created us to have some of his attributes, even though they're limited. That we've got things that are true about us that were first true inside of him. That we can think, that we have, that we're reasonable, that we have emotion, that we understand justice and right from wrong. Like, that's not true in the animal kingdom or in any other part of his creation. There's things that are true about us because we're created in the image of God that are not true about anything else in creation. One of the things that winds up being true about us, and I think particularly of men, is the need to step into chaos and create order. It's to step into chaos and create order. It's to step into the void. It's to step into the fear. It's to step into that place where you don't have the answers, where there's not a clear map laid out, and bring order to it. Never on your own, but we'll get to that in a second. It's built into the DNA of who we are as men. Now, does that mean it's not true about women at all? Like, this is where I think we get sidetracked in these conversations a lot. We right away think, well, is that true about women or not? I don't even want to talk about what's true about women, okay? And the handful of things that I'm going to bring to us to think about. Yes, but there's something distinctively different about men when it comes to the need to step into chaos to create order. There just is. We've got examples of how instinctive it is to us all around us. Here's one. Sometimes it's not all that great of an idea, but we'll just start here. Okay, like I can tell you right now, there's never been a group of women that said, ladies, let's get together and go to Pamplona and run with bulls. But guys do it. And it's not because guys are dumb or, no. It's maybe not the best way to exploit our need to bring order to chaos, but there's something right about it at its core. Okay, even though you wind up getting gored and cut in half and, there's something really bad about it too. But it's speaking to something inside of us. How about this one? We know this picture though, don't we? Again, those are dudes. That doesn't mean that there's not a place anywhere ever for a woman to get underneath the hood of a car, but that's a guy thing to do. To get up on top of an engine and try to figure out how to fix it. Something that's broke. Where else have we seen it? This just came to me. This is so random, but I had just seen this again recently. Yeah, this was Lord Shackelford. This is back in the early 1900s. Shackelford was a guy that was a traveler. He was trying to go to the South Pole. So I don't know if he actually ever really put this ad out. This isn't the actual ad, but this is how he recruited. For hazardous journey, small wages, bitter cold, long months of complete darkness, constant danger, safe return doubtful. In fact, a whole bunch of them died that signed up to do this. Honor and recognition in case of success. Here's how you reach me. Guys lined up for it. That's crazy. That's as crazy as running with bulls right there. Yeah? Guys lined up for it. What is that? Beyond that, we go to climb Everest. Why do people climb Everest? Because it's there, but there's something deeper going on inside of people to do that. Ironman competitions where you conquer your body and push yourself to new limits. Moments in history where we've sought to conquer something in science or some barrier that's been set in front of us. You know, God said that we would go and have dominion over the earth. And we've been finding a million ways to expand that throughout the centuries. That's just another one of them, to go to the moon, for heaven's sakes. These guys in 9/11, we were there actually 3 weeks after it happened, and we were stationed just outside. I was there with a group of people from crew. We were stationed just outside of Ground Zero, and we were just there to minister to guys and serve guys and get them water and whatnot through a night shift with the Red Cross. And it was dudes. And they were coming in, and they were messed up, and you know, everybody was traumatized by it. But there was something about just being a guy, okay? It was all guys. They were coming in, they were digging around in that pile. Now they were tasked with trying to bring order out of this evil chaos that happened. Just other examples. Again, I'm just flooding your mind with how this gets played out as a part of our manhood as examples. Just instinctively, social movements or seeing something in society that's not right, that needs to be made right. It's chaos and it needs to be stepped into. Construction workers, work that, look how happy these construction workers are right here. I noticed that when I put them in there. I don't know that most construction workers are that happy, but there's a joy to stepping into a space where there's nothing and then making something be there that's ordered and beautiful and useful and purposeful. There's a dignity to construction work. There's a masculine dignity to that. Of course, entrepreneurship or businessmen, as all of you align with that title, to be a surgeon, to go into chaos and bring order. Y'all get that intuitively. Yes? Okay. Where do women fit in that? I don't know. And I'm not going to keep disclaiming it. I don't even want to deal with that. There's something innately masculine that God, because we're created in his image, and he is a God who steps into chaos and brings order, there's a stamp on our heart that wants to do the same thing intuitively. Okay. But then we go on in Genesis to chapter 3. And Jim, again, he led us right there. If you go to Genesis chapter 3, there's the whole scene with Eve and the serpent that Jim unpacked for us at the beginning last night. And he said that verse 10 was one of the saddest verses in the Bible. That's after that they had taken of the fruit and ate it. And Adam said, I heard the sound of you in the garden. I was afraid because I was naked and I hid myself. And I think you can make a strong argument that that's a tragically sad verse that we've been suffering the consequences for ever since. But I think you could make equally strong argument for verse 5 being just as tragic, if not more. Well, verse 4, I'll say, the serpent said to the woman, you'll not surely die. God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be open. You'll be like God, knowing good and evil. So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was to be desired to make one wise, all good things, she took of its fruit and ate. And she also gave some to her husband who was with her. And he ate. She gave some to her husband who was with her. And he ate. That's a tragic moment right there in the history of dudehood. Because he's with her the whole time as the snake is doing what he's doing, as she's working this through in her mind, as she's going and eating and then giving some to him. And at least in the text, he doesn't say anything. Why not? Again, this is where we could get weird because the text doesn't really say why not, but we're all guys. Imagine being in the situation. Why do you not say anything? Might have loved his wife more than he loved God. I'm not looking for any one particular answer. I think there's a whole bunch of possibilities. He loves something else in that moment more than God. We'll come back over there. What? He was being passive. So just give it a little bit more. Another sentence.
He just decided not to step in.
Fearful. He's fearful. That's the word that actually sits at the top of my list. Just go ahead. Talk about being fearful for a second. Why is he afraid? He's God's man. Everything's been good up to this point. Maybe he kind of wants to see what will happen, right? Okay. Okay, go ahead. First conflict. It is the first conflict. That was a choice to avoid the conflict. How'd that work out? Go ahead. Okay, which is interesting in light of what Jim was doing with us last night. He doesn't know who he is so that he can respond right away. Or he forgets. He chooses to block it out. Like, I can imagine all that. You know why? Because I've done the same thing. Lack of confidence. Anything else?
Maybe he was just waiting for her to die and she didn't, so he thought, eh.
Maybe he was waiting for her to die, and she didn't, so it's like, ah, give me a piece. It's before lunch, and we don't have time, so I'm not doing anything else with that. There really wasn't a fight. And so I've heard this talked about. There needed to be one. If ever there needed to be a fight, if ever somebody needed to step up, if ever we needed some 9/11 attitude, some construction worker attitude, it would have been to go and grab that snake by its neck in that moment, slam its head on the ground. Yes? If we're not going to do that, if ever there was a time to have a conflict with the only other human being that's now with me, it's, I know exactly what God told us to do, and it was not that. Stop. He didn't do either. Okay. Not busting on Adam. We get it. He chose not to do anything. What else? Anybody else? Because you're making a list. I see somebody writing stuff down. It's good, because this is good conversation stuff. Anything else we need to add to the list of maybe why he wouldn't have done something? Sir. Okay. He didn't want to lose her as a mate, which wound up getting him to disobey God. And again, I'm not trying to bust on Adam here, but and throw the whole universe into consequential anguish. And so I just think, wow, okay. Again, my task is not to beat on Adam. My task is to ask myself, why do I follow in his footsteps so often? Because my decisions to not step in to be passive, to not step into these moments, they don't bring about universal consequence, but doggone it, guys, they bring about consequences in my life. They bring about consequences in my wife's life and in my kid's life and in my friend's life and in my life, and sometimes stepping outside the purpose for which I'm here when I choose to follow in the silence of Adam. So it's worth thinking about. It's worth thinking about. Look back at the outline. Larry Crabb wrote a book called The Silence of Adam. Maybe some of you read it. Back in the late 90s, and that's even where I first was really confronted with this whole idea of Adam's silence. God speaking, I love this line from him. I don't know why I don't have this cited, but that Larry Crabb said this, that God's speaking brought creation out of chaos. Adam's silence brought chaos into creation. So good. So I showed you all these slides where we instinctively do it, but what do we do in these situations? You see, this is what I want to say about the man up thing and what I've been thinking about for myself and what I'm sharing with you. I love that as guys, it's, I don't want to say it's easy. It's easier for me though to find courage to run into the building on 9/11. It's easier for me to subdue my body in different ways over time. It's easier for me to find courage to do that. It's like I wholeheartedly believe, even though we don't know each other, if there was some catastrophe that happened here down the road, all of us would go together. Some, especially if all of us were in our younger bodies, we wouldn't hesitate to lock arms together and take courage and go. In fact, those of us that were timid or afraid would find courage by us all doing it together. We would. I've seen that over the course of my life. But where I most need courage is in these scenes right here. Like this is where I go silent. This is where the greater consequences happen in my life. And I wrote some of these things down here for you. Again, I could have just left them blank for you, but I was just having a little bit of a brain dump for myself of where I need to not be silent relationally. I need to not be silent emotionally, spiritually, culturally. And these are just different ways that I've done it and that I've experienced other men doing it. It's trying to step into the chaos of a crying wife or girlfriend or daughter. It's, you know, now with kids, the chaos of trying to raise kids or little babies. Some of us are in that that realm now. Grief and settings where grief is taking place. Settings of intimacy. And I thought this was a great picture because this is spiritual intimacy, which just scares some of us to death. The idea of looking into my own spiritual life and looking into my own soul, but the idea of being with other men, holding hands or doing something of this nature where we touch each other in some way, scares some of us to death. A whole bunch of us are finding ourselves in situations where we're in the hospital, where we're caring for people who have died. I've had 7 people die in my life in the last 2 years. We've had 2 couples that have been our best friends for 20 years. We do everything together. You talk about Bob Foster talking about who's that one. I've got 2 couples, okay? Our kids are together all the time. We do holidays together. It's like family, okay, apart from family. So Elizabeth, who's one of them, is my best friend's wife. She had cancer 8 years ago. It went away. 2 years ago, it came back. And it didn't stop. Like, we did everything. We had prayer services. We had elders coming from different churches. We went to doctors everywhere. My friend and I were stepping into the chaos of this together. All of us were calling out to God to lead us to a place where we could get to save Elizabeth. Unimaginable. She's a great minister of the gospel, you guys. In China, she was a great minister in China. Again, I don't even want to get into her bio. The world needs more of her. So I still remember being in the hospital when it turned out she's about 2 hours away from her last breath and watching her lay there on the bed. Some of you guys were already talking about that scene recently. And I remember just the shell of her body as she was leaving and feeling like I needed somehow to move towards her. In fact, I have felt that for weeks, actually. How do I move towards her right now? My wife has been crying incessantly, spontaneously, at different times over the last few months, okay? How do I step into that when what I really want to do is say, I need you to stop crying because I need this to go away. I need it to go away. My friend is about to lose his wife. And I've got to step into that somehow. This chaos. I'm scared to death of all this stuff. And I just remember it. Like sometimes, like Jim was saying, man, it's true. Sometimes you put your finger on that cancer and you pray and God says, you know what? I hear that. And for right now, we're taking that away and it goes away. Sometimes you put your finger on that cancer and it goes straight through your ear into your brain and you die. And God says, I got you. I'm still greater than Satan and all the brokenness that's in the world. But for right now, the cancer stays. That's a messy place. That's a chaotic place, isn't it? It's a scary place. And my manhood gets tested more there than it does when I'm in an Ironman. You with me? My manhood is constantly being tested by those situations and those relational moments. That's the word I want to throw out on the table here before we go to lunch. It's those relational moments that pose fear and scare me, and I've never been there before. All the stuff that we were saying about Adam. I'm trying to hold on to something, or I'm trying to hold on to a reputation, or I'm not sure what to do with this. I don't want them to know that I don't know. It's in those moments that I most need to grab a hold of God's hand. And Jim, you had even started quoting Walt yesterday about you never do this alone. Maybe pull that quote out in a second for me if you would, putting you on the spot. You don't do this alone. This is where in Romans chapter 7. Let's just look at this real quick and then we'll stop. Wow. Romans chapter 7. You know this chapter, the last part of this chapter where Paul's talking about the law and sin and what sin does inside of him. And he says, I'll just go down to verse 15 for now. He says, I love this. I don't understand my own actions, for I do not do what I want, but the very thing I hate. Now, if I do what I don't want, I agree with the law that it's good. It's condemning me for being a sinful. It's no longer I, so now it's no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells within me. For I know that nothing good dwells in me, that is in my flesh. For I have the desire to do what is right, but not the ability to carry it out. Oh my gosh. Like I feel that, like this is just talking about sin in general, okay? But my failure to step into situations that I am supposed to step into is oftentimes in the category of sin for me. This is where I go back to the 1 Corinthians verse. This is act like men, be strong, and be firm in the faith. Let all that you do be done in love. Like I'm being commanded to do that just as a Christian. But especially in light of even what we talked about, as a man, I don't think passivity is an option at the end of the day for me to fulfill the reason why God has me on the planet. Because I'm just surrounded every single day with those kinds of situations relationally that scare me to death. So Paul says, I don't do what I need to do. I have the desire to do it, but I don't do it. I don't do the good that I want, but the evil I do not want is what I keep on doing. Now, if I do what I don't want, it's no longer I who do it, but it's sin that dwells in me. That's the problem. He says at the bottom of this, wretched man, verse 24, wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death? Thanks be to God through Jesus Christ our Lord. So then I myself serve the law of God with my mind, but with my flesh I serve the law of sin. And I love what Wayne did even when we looked at the passage in Jude. He's the one that will keep me from stumbling. He's the one that wants to hold my hand both in this life and the next and help me to step into these moments of chaos that I was created to step into and play the role of a man, okay, and fulfill the reason why he's got me here on the earth as a man. So what are those moments for you? Again, I know, man, we've already heard a lot this morning. We're going to go eat right now. What I wanted was to have time for you to be able to talk about it and think about it. And maybe we shouldn't even leave here before you write one situation down that represents a situation of relational chaos, okay? Relational chaos that you need to step into. And I even did this. I put all this stuff up here about yourself. Maybe it's peer pressure. Some of you younger guys maybe are feeling peer pressure either towards you or somebody else is getting picked on. Maybe that's a situation that you need to step into. What we're doing with our own mind and our hearts, sometimes the chaos is inside ourselves first. Some of us are in here and we are in massive chaos. You didn't raise your hand last night because nobody ever raises their hand at a Jesus camp. When somebody says, who in here doesn't know Jesus? That's not the first thing you're going to admit to. But we know that some of us in here are probably further away from the Lord than we should be. And there's an inner chaos that needs to be dealt with before him and talked about maybe with somebody else. What did you write down? I'm going to be quiet. Write it down for yourself. That's mine too right now, actually. A relational chaos scares you. You feel ill-equipped. Lord, thank you for this morning and the opportunity to think about so many things that are challenging us. As Randy said, most of which is going to fly away from our mind, but you take that one or two things that you don't want us to miss from the time we've had so far, and would you cause that to stick to us, stick to our conscience, stick to our heart? Help us to remember what Wayne did for us this morning, to see you high and lifted up, that we can take courage because you're a big God who wins in the end, that you've got a purpose for us now and in the life to come, Help us to take courage in the midst of whatever it is that you're putting on our heart and mind to face. And I pray that you'd give us courage even in this next 24 hours to maybe have that conversation with somebody that's here as we keep being encouraged to do. Help us to initiate saying, hey, here's what I wrote down. And help us to be good listeners to each other. Thanks for great food to eat. As we're working on our mind and spirit all morning, now we need to replenish our body. And thanks that there's a good meal downstairs for us to jump into. Bless us as we head into the rest of the day. In Jesus' name, amen.